Hi, today's August 6th, 2023. This is MobileViews Podcast 469. I'm Todd Agasaora. The good Dr. John Westfall is not here with us today. He went to a national conference and they made him sick. No, I don't think so. But whatever the cause was, he came back with a cold of sorts and not able to join me. But fortunately, we had previously planned to have our good friend Stephen Hughes join us. So, Steve, welcome. Thanks for being the surprise guest co-host this week. Really appreciate your time.
Great to be here. Thanks.
The first thing I want to do is mention another old friend of ours, a mutual old friend of ours, Sven Johansson, who I was talking to a while back, I think maybe before I even retired, and I was telling him, you know, I'm paying like $55 a month to my wireline phone provider. And basically all I get on, you know, it's spam. But the reason I kept it is, well, two things. Reason number one, it's because I'm an old telephone engineer. and I believe that it is still the most, in a pinch, it is still the most reliable form of communication in this country. Mm-hmm. But, and number two is I have so many things associated with my, you know, my home phone line that is, oh, you know, what if I cut it off and you know, I need to verify something and they call the number and it's not me, right? So I said, oh. Mm-hmm. So I guess I could have ported it to my cell phone, except I don't trust the cell phone carriers. And, you know, and so I said, well, okay. So I talked to Sven about it and Sven says, well, I bought this thing called Uma because he did the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I bought a Uma Teleair 2. I think he bought the LTE version, but I bought the Wi-Fi version. And guess what? The Wi-Fi doesn't work. So I have to plug in the Ethernet.
Use Ethernet? Well, Ethernet's more reliable than when the power goes out, right? But unless you have it hooked up to a switch.
Yeah, which I do. And I have a cable modem, so if the power goes out, I'm dead in the water.
It's dead, yeah. That's a good thing about old landline.
Right? Yeah.
Technically, you're supposed to have the voltage delivered through your Cat 5 cable, but now that's all VoIP stuff now anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you assume so much. Even you live in a modern part of the country. We've got paper wrapped. It's not even Cat 2.
Oh, really?
Copper. Yeah. In fact, I've got a 1500 pair bundle that was cut out of a segment is somewhere in my home, to, you know, for old time's sake. So people know what paper wrapped
and tone copper wire.
Yeah. And you know, and toning. I mean, I was never a technician, but I've heard stories about where there was a backhoe cut. And these poor techs had to go out and tone all 1,500 pairs.
Oh, my God.
Because there's no way to tell, right?
Yeah. We used to work, construction was like all the time, even though we did dig safe, did all that stuff. But they would always cut a fiber line.
Yeah, right? It's crazy. Or somebody's just not careful. They didn't do the dig check and just backhoed it.
Yeah.
And I do have a story. I think I've told before about when I was at GT. I do not have firsthand knowledge of this, but there's somewhere out in Virginia. I think GT had some lines there, and there was a break, and they go down and they find their cable, and there's another cable. Says, what's this? What's this other cable? Broken cable? And so they're kind of
not all
standing around looking at it, and then these black SUVs show up and go, get away from that cable.
No.
But so they did. So I picked up this. So I had to use Ethernet. I have not contacted their tech support to try to figure out why the Wi-Fi doesn't work. But since Ethernet's working, fine. I wasted a few extra dollars. I gotta say,
Do you have to do any troubleshooting, like hook it up to like a computer or anything like that, too?
Yes, I did. In fact, I had to do that even earlier. Early on, because I had problems just setting it up. You know, you're supposed to just be able to download the app and have it configure it and blah, blah, blah. And it just wasn't doing it, you know, via Bluetooth. And so I plugged it directly into a PC, which turned out to be a problem because I only have like two PCs with the Ethernet jack left.
That's all, yeah.
You know, I think I have a USB-C hub that has an Ethernet hub, but I'd have to go look for it. Anyway, so fortunately, I bought some mini NUC type PCs over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I plugged it in, and I used the built-in web server on the Uma to configure it as best I could. And it was really slow because it turned out it needed a firmware upgrade, and I have 500 megabits down, but it was still slow for whatever reason. And the setup was kind of error prone and kind of failed once or twice and then finally worked. But that said, you know, and also I found out you cannot call or be called from a Google Fi wireless phone.
That's strange. Is it the PNO agreement?
I don't know, but AT&T works. AT&T Wireless works fine, and my current ILEC can call it fine. So, you know, it's just Google Fi, which in my area of the country is T-Mobile. So I don't know. Yeah, I should have somebody with T-Mobile to try to call the number. But anyway, it's up and running as best as it can, and I'm just now waiting for the porting request to go through, which takes a while, like weeks and weeks and weeks. So
get a provision properly.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to be patient, and hopefully, you know, by the end of this month or something, I will have cut off my $55 a month. Now, that doesn't mean it's zero, because aside from the hardware costs, you have to pick basically a tax, like $5 or $6 a month for basic service. And then I opted for the $100 a year premier, for a bunch of other features. I don't know why. Maybe I won't do it after this year. And because I'm in Hawaii, even if I didn't pick up the premier service, I would have to pay $30 a year, I think, or $40 a year, maybe, because number porting is only a free service, a one-time charge in the lower 48, Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico.
They always get
you. Yeah. You know, it's the price of paradise, right? But anyway, thanks to Sven, despite my issues, you know, no fault of Sven, of course. You know, I think it was a good purchase, and I'm looking forward to reducing my monthly bill from 55 to about, when does it come out? About $12 a month or something. As a retiree, all cost savings are good.
Yeah, especially with the streaming service prices going up.
Oh my God, yeah, we'll talk about that later. That was a good question. So, and by good question to our five listeners, Stephen generously offered a whole bunch of topics. I think I forgot a few in my list, but a whole bunch of topics of which I'm really interested in, and so I'm looking forward to talking to you about it. I'm sure John would have too, and hope, you know, chime in later when we talk to him on this. But anyway, so the first topic you wanted to bring up was home automation, and I'm trying to think how much of it I do. Mine is very minor. You're probably more sophisticated than me.
Yeah, because we just moved to a new house, and I had in my older house to basically controlling all the lights, a few other stuff too, like appliances, cooking, connecting into the thermostats, basic stuff that people do. Then we moved to our new home, and I decided, hey, you know what? I got to upgrade now because the technology is kind of like fading out, and I want to be as compatible as possible. Before Matter came out with their standard, so I went with a company that basically has a configuration and with everyone else out there. It's called SmartThings, I believe. It's called Smarter Living. They rebranded themselves, but they make a home automation devices for several different manufacturers and companies. If you go on Amazon, they always say their program is compatible with Smart Life. So that's what I went with Smart Life. And you can find them on Amazon between like $10 all the way up to $100, depending on what you want to do with the devices. So I went with that because it works with both Android, Apple, and also as works with IFTT. And now they have they're a part of the Matter group as well too. So it makes things so much easier when everything is compatible, and they upgrade stuff over time. There's constant software updates, which I like because I'm into security type of thing. So I do want to follow that. So I went with that, and they have some devices out there that are so easy. If you're not an electrician and you want to do like a two-way, three-way, four-way switches, they have like a special switch. You only have to replace one switch. Well, the solution replace all the switches. So right. It's kind of nice. You have a two-way switch or a three-way switch in the area, and you don't need to place one with that smart switch. So then you control all those lights. And it's nice. So I have automations that set up during sunset, sunrise, lights turn on. Also use a SwitchBot too, opens up curtains and opens up blinds. So it makes a nice peaceful transition. So when right 10 minutes before sunrise or 10 minutes before sunset, all those automations go in and lights slowly come up at night. You have to think about it. I also have motion sensors in some rooms. They also have a door connects as well too, so it opening out in the garage, our sliders too, we know when those are open and closed, and we got to start automations of that too. If you want to turn the fan on outside, you can do that as well too. So when it gets hot in the hotter months, you can have a set up like a routine that will actually say, hey, it's at this temperature, this door opens up at this time of day. Stuff like that. And same thing with like if you want to do like we also have a camera integration too. I went with Wyze.
Yeah, I've got some Wyze.
So I'm started with them with Kickstarter, and we've been
pretty much staying with them for the integration, and it works with across all the different platforms too, which is nice. So.
Have you tried their outdoor battery operated cameras? I think there's a new model out.
Yeah, they do have one. I think it's the version 2 or version 3 camera, which I think is version 2. It's battery operated. You also can hook the solar panel up to it as well too.
Oh,
I know
neat.
That backyard for one on our fence that just sits there and watches the back corner of the fence.
Did you buy the solar panel from Wyze or did you buy the third party?
I bought that one actually through Amazon. I was trying to get it through Wyze. Every time I tried to order it, it was always back.
Sold out. Yeah. What I meant is it a Wyze brand solar panel for?
No, it's just a generic brand.
Yeah. Just pumps out enough watts and amps, and you're good. I have a much more modest setup. I've got like a 2 floor lamps and a bulb, which came with.
I moved away from the bulb stuff because it was just too complicated. Because someone switches a switch on the wall, the bulb not working. Get power.
You know? Oh well. Mine is in my little workroom, so I'm the only one who touches that switch, so it's fine. And the bulb came with my, I bought a Echo, what did I buy? Echo Dot? The little sphere Echo. The ball. To replace my Echo Show, which was starting to flicker, and I wasn't sure I wanted to spend another $80-$90. So it was on sale for like $30, and it came with a bulb. And also, it turns out that the little Echo Dot is a Eero Wi-Fi mesh, node. So even though I have a tiny home, I do have a few dead spots. So that helped me. And then where I wanted it to go actually helped deal with those dead spots. So that I think that's about all I have. And I'm trying to think, do I have anything else? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Very modest. You know, we don't have thermostats and stuff in Hawaii. So not that we can't have them, but, we just don't.
Get the tree with, so it's nice.
It does help. Does help. And we haven't had that crazy heat dome that parts of the U.S., most of the U.S., I should say, I guess. Have you been affected by the heat dome? Are you outside of that dome?
So we're kind of in a nice area. I'm in the Sacramento area, so we have what's called the Delta Breeze. It's a combination of winds, also kind of similar to the trade winds, where it comes up the American River, Sacramento River, down the city at night. So from the San Francisco Bay Area, northwest. So it's nice. I mean, it does get hot. I mean, it was a lot hotter last year, if I remember correctly, but it seems temperature's always rising everywhere. So unfortunately, I think the whole weather patterns across the world has changed.
Yes. And you're talking about some kind of Atlantic current that might just collapse, and that sounds ominous.
Yeah, well, we have that atmospheric river that seems to come back every year as well too from Indonesia. Yeah. It's crazy what rain comes now.
Yeah.
You said just have one rain season here, which is November to January, if that, and we just it's raining off and on. That then we had the past year, we just constant rain for long periods of time
after a long drought, right? You guys are running out of water, and then all of a sudden, oops, too much.
It was a decade of drought,
Over here, we're in hurricane season, which starts in June and ends in November, so we're kind of right in the middle of hurricane season right now. We've only had really one that kind of approached us. We have one that's way south of us now. I think it's 1,500 miles south of us. So we're just going to get a bit of wind, nothing else. But we're fortunate. Most of us don't have to deal with extremes of temperature in Hawaii. I think I've told you and John, some of my other friends, having grown up in cold weather areas, it drives me nuts when I see people wearing jackets in Hawaii, any time of the year.
Yeah, it's what the people are adapted to, so.
I don't know. I think they're just asking for a heat stroke myself, but I want to go up to them and go, shake them and go, do you know where you are right now? Or are you having a heat stroke and you're confused?
Yeah. Oahu doesn't have too many different temperature changes, right? So.
No, people here start talking about, getting extra blankets out when it hits 68 at night. Which other people would consider, hey, it's time to put on the shorts and t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, automation, I'm just thinking, I have a couple of Wyze cameras, which I have to basically look at my pets back when I was still working and I wanted to check on them in the day. And I think I am really a Luddite. I don't have much more than that. I've thought about a few other things, haven't really done much. I don't have any fancy locks, or my floodlights are, you know, are automated, but only in the sense of a motion sensor. They're not hooked up to anything. Yeah. So, you know, old school automation. I was thinking about putting an outdoor camera, which is why I asked you. So I'm glad I spoke to you about that. I've been pretty happy with the Wyze because of price, but boy, sometimes the firmware upgrades are a little bit flaky.
They have constant firmware upgrades. They're updating those.
Yeah.
I think it's like, well, it's like, seems like weekly now that they find something or they want to patch.
Which is good. Yeah, which is good.
It is. It's like, I don't know how many other companies do that. So
yeah. They did have one firmware upgrade for a Wyze pan cam, which I have like three, a couple of years ago. And they got the time zone wrong for Hawaii, or they left us out. And so my cameras just stopped operating, and I had to, the fix was to download the firmware manually. And I think I had to connect it up via Ethernet or something and manually upgrade the firmware. So I had dead cameras for a while. That was no fun.
They just came out with the Wyze Cam Hand version 3, which is really, really cool. You can actually hang it from like leaves on your awning, or if you can put it on the mount.
Oh, neat.
So, and it also has a thing called privacy mode where it actually rotates and turns off. So you can actually turn it off. So
you
can set that for during periods of time too. So like if you do have it indoors, you want a privacy in your home.
Sure.
You're afraid someone's going to hack into it, or at least. Or if you have someone share the access with someone else, they don't see it only for certain hours of the day.
Right. Just right. Yeah. So have you done any other stuff like put in the, you know, a fancy computer controlled heat pump or any of those kind of things?
No, at this time, no. We moved away from. We have solar and works with that. So it's integrates with the online web panel, and you can actually integrate with an app too if you want to do more stuff with it, but you just
your
output comes in and out. And I haven't gone to like the Tesla wall system yet or anything like that, so we're looking into it, but right now it looks cost prohibitive. I was like talking with a few other friends, and they spent a lot of money on their systems, and then their cost of return was like takes us several years to do. I mean, that's like what it was with solar panels back in the day,
but
it just didn't. I don't see it yet. I don't think the technology is quite there, but I think it's getting there. And I think Tesla does a pretty good thing. I think they recycle older batteries from their old Teslas, put them in the walls, and they have a nice power condition on it, so it extends the life of the batteries.
Yeah, I thought about,
we're not in an area where you have power outed it that much, so it's not really a primary need. But
yeah, I live in almost like a developing nation in terms of power, where our power grid is not so reliable. But that said, I've thought about photovoltaic over the years, but especially after my daughter moved out, you know, we pay even in enhanced,
Only because the bill went down a lot, right?
But even, you know, with just the two of us, I think I pay maybe about $140 a month in electricity, which is not bad in Hawaii because we have the highest, you know, per wattage rate in the nation, I think. And given my age, I would not live long enough to do cost recovery. So, you know, I was watching, what's that really popular tech reviewer, Marquez Brownlee, I think his name is. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. He put in a Tesla wall and some other fancy-dancy, you know, PV stuff to power them. And he said he paid $120,000, you know?
I think he did the whole Tesla roof as well, too, the shingles.
Yeah.
And also that are double them as shingles and solar panels.
Yeah. And, you know, since I pay like $1,800 a year, you know, I'd have to live to be like 130 to do cost recovery and that. So, not in my lifetime, as they say, unfortunately, in my literal lifetime.
Well, so it is. Yeah, people have to figure that out too. It's nice to have. I mean, if you can afford it, you can go with it.
But or if you want to make a statement and you're rich enough. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get that. I get that kind of aspirational technology. So that's pretty much it for me. I'm glad you mentioned the cybersecurity stuff because there's been so many security issues recently, including, you know, Microsoft's extremely embarrassing recent ones. I mean, not just them, but, you know, that one, the Azure thing just was like, what? Hello?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and nice thing too, like there's now that they're coming out with the new cybersecurity labels for Internet of Things called the US Cyber Trust Mark.
Basically, for every internet-connected device should have that. So what they have is going to have a QR code on every device, and you actually be able to scan it and see how safe that device is. So it's a constantly living document. It's not a static thing. So it will currently rate and give you updated information on those devices. So they're doing it right now just for IoMT devices that are connected, like your cameras and your devices around your home. But I think it should be for everything in general. So the thing you're buying, if it's a phone, a computer, anything that's connected to any of your appliances in your home, I mean, it should have that rating on it, kind of like an ETA rating you have for your food. Listening or an SBOM, something like that. But this is for cybersecurity health. And I think it's a good way to move forward. I mean, there's not too many standards that are set up in place yet, but this is like a good start for it. So I'm glad that Jen actually would be able to push us through with CISA. Nice thing.
Yeah, I just went to the FCC website with the information, and I will put it in our show notes. So thank you. I see they have some very colorful logos.
Yeah, I think they have like three different color logos trying to write like the cybersecurity level you can look at, so you can do a quick glance when you're buying something.
Nice. Or online. Nice. They don't say what the colors mean, though, or at least not in.
No, they don't. But they'll probably have a fact that will come out, like a one pager that will explain everything to you. And hopefully they'll have some YouTube videos and be a part of the social TikTok or something like that.
We are talking to government.
Yeah, guys, the government's moving along. I mean,
I know you and I have both worked in it for a while, so, yeah. You know, we can say that.
It's like
steering the Titanic with one arm behind your back and blindfolded. Well, that said, you know, I'm glad they did it too, and thanks for teaching me about that today. I was not aware of it. Okay, so the U.S. Cyber Trustmark coming out of the FCC. I'll put a link in the show notes when I go, or you can just search for it. All right, next one is something John and I have been, you know, John, as a cognitive psychologist, you know, I've been talking to him a bit about this, and also a college professor. You know, how are you handling this in schools, and you know, how are you using it and all of this? So what do you think? Did you see that Stanford study that alleges, it is getting done?
It is, AI machine learning can get smarter and can get dumber and not smarter if not checked and corrected, which is like anything, right? So bad data in, bad data out. So that's what's happened.
Right. And as we also know from past experiences, especially Microsoft's chatbots, earlier chatbots, they can get evil.
Yeah. It learns what it's taught, right? It's taught bad information. Same thing. Like a child when they go to school, they're innocent, pure, you're right. All depends on what's being taught at school. Sometimes in the classroom, sometimes outside the classroom.
I'm sure a dark chat GPT is already in testing somewhere, doing evil things. So, we'll ask Don Sorsinelli, who is the expert on evil, to go find it for us.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you been using it in your work or just personal life? It being, you know, the various large language models and so forth.
Yeah, we've been using like machine learning a lot. I mean, it's not real true AI. People always confuse the two. The news always pushes out AI. Stuff like they're buying files on Wheel of Fortune or something. But it's basically like it's all true right now. It's machine learning. So we use it in the medical areas. We use it now doing for diagnostics. We've done it for a while for EKGs, looking for arrhythmias, tachycardia, bradycardia. So we've been doing it for a while. Same thing with central monitors. It basically uses data that has been sourced from known items that this is 100% true. And then it does a correlation. And we've also used it now for what's called like lung CAT studies. We do it for doing radiological exams, looking at tumors. And so basically we'll highlight the areas where it thinks might be something that someone missed. And I'll say, hey, we need you to look at this, confirm that this is truly a malignant tumor. We've also been using it too in microbiology. They do it with slide analysis too. It can quickly scan stuff that the human eye can't do in a short period of time and does the same thing, highlights it, and asks for confirmation after. So trying to reduce the amount of bias and speed up the amount of work that people are doing. Mm-hmm. It does do a great job at doing that. And we're also using it in the lab now too. They do the same thing with doing your lab tests. They do a lot of scans on it and they say, hey, these might be a potential, take a look at this. And that's the way it should be used. And consumers will learn as that machine learning. I don't think it's going to become fully agnostic and say, hey, this is, do everything on your own. I don't think we should be there. She always had checks and balances and looking at this stuff.
We should have a safety driver.
Yeah, so that's the problem with the internet right now. It's like it doesn't have that safe check. And that's the same thing with like automated driving. I mean, people have the automated driving, you should always still be there to override it if possible. Yeah. Same thing with cruise control in a car, same with autopilot flying a plane. I mean, you got to have some.
Yeah, and I should note for the folks who haven't followed AI-ish kinds of stuff the way Steven has, pattern recognition was one of the first real successes in whatever you want to call AI. I mean, decades and decades and decades ago, like when I was young, I remember looking at it and doing stuff with it, you know, very primitive stuff compared to today, where we had to write everything in Lisp and or in low-level C, and it was painful.
Yeah.
But we're doing it, you know, even the early neural nets and stuff. I should also note that I believe, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe your background is in biomedical engineering. Is that correct? So,
yeah, it is.
So, you know, Steve knows what of he speaks. So I just wanted to mention that. It's not just spouting up stuff you read. Right?
You only know with the smartest 10 people around, you know, basically. That's what it usually is.
Well,
then a lot of it rubs off on me. So.
Well, one of the things I found... All the smart people. One of the things I learned, especially as I was growing up and I got old, I kind of confirmed it, is it's the most important thing you can do is recognize that other people are smarter than you are and listen to them.
Yep.
You know, versus being the smartest guy in the room all the time, because that doesn't always work well.
No. But surround yourself with good people. Like,
yeah.
I think like Ada Lovelace even said that too. And she was like the first computer programmer. She programmed everything using punch cards for doing like textiles in the industry and use that to create the background. And she surrounded herself with like Charles Babbage, you know?
Yeah.
The engineer. You even had computer stores named after him.
And the Babbage engine. But yeah.
And the Turing as well, too. So it's like the stuff still comes back. It's crazy. And the people should learn about the history that's there and move forward with it because they did a lot of groundbreaking stuff.
So when just before I retired, as I was cleaning out my office, I found a pull box of Hollerith cards, unused Hollerith cards. Yeah, full box. So I think a box holds 2,000 cards. And so I grabbed a few for myself for, you know, old time's sake.
Yeah.
And I did what then. I actually got it from somebody else when he retired. So I passed it along to the next generation.
At a museum.
And folks, for folks who don't remember what a Hollerith card is, go look it up on the interwebs. You will be like, what? You programmed using paper? Yes. Yes, yeah. We did.
And if you dropped it and they weren't numbered, big task I set ahead.
Yeah. Although they usually had internal numbers, so you could put it in your card sorter, but I have seen people drop them and cry in the old days.
And my dad used to teach a computer class, and I saw it happen a lot, and then they moved over thing to like paper tape and then magnetic tape and then huge 8.5-inch floppies, fives, the threes.
You know, and not to be a computer history episode, although that would be fun too. Again, this is not exactly new, but back in the 80s when I got a DECVAX 2060 in, which did a bootload, let me think. I think it was a two-part bootload. One was you put in a 10-megabyte disk pack, which was about the size of it was big. You know, you needed two hands to lift that thing. And then use that to boot from tape. But I think DEC still shipped us paper tape, even though I didn't have a paper tape reader, you know, just because you might need it someday.
Yeah. Well, it's like when Microsoft used to ship CDs, they'd still give you the 3.5, like 30 discs.
Right.
They'd still ship that as well, too.
Right? I just found mine.
All sealed up.
I found my my Chicago with pre-Windows 95. My Windows 95 beta came like 3.5-inch floppy disk. Hilarious. But anyway, so this week in computer history. And kind of going back to electric powered things. So I assume you have a Tesla and you've been.
No, we have a Kia Niro.
Okay.
But yeah, the Tesla prices have dropped. I mean, but they always say the prices are all kind of exaggerated because they always throw in the cost savings, what you can save over a period of time with the tax and the true cost. And then there's like what it could cost. So they're not always clear on that. And it looks like now with their range, they're getting sued now by their customers, the class action suit that their ranges and its claims. So it's kind of like what VW went through with their diesel engines. They kind of stretched what they said they was claimed, and they had that's why their Electrify America now exists, because that was part of the settlement that VW had to deal with the United States because they lied about it. So the infrastructure isn't quite there what they claimed and planned for, but hopefully that we'll see what will happen. I mean, Tesla's already is trying to make routes now to become the standard for electric car charging, which is a better connector, I think, what's currently out there. So hopefully maybe that will be the piece that they have, and they'll probably put it, open up more for everybody.
That's, you know, one of the problems here in Hawaii is I've noticed a lot of people have, you know, electric vehicles as well as hybrids, but, you know, I've noticed a lot more fully electric vehicles recently. And because so many people have bought them, they don't gas up, which means they don't pay, you know, the gas taxes that fund road repairs and things. And so now I think, I don't know if it passed or if they're just talking about it, but there, I remember there being some discussion about taxing EV owners, you know, extra by weight a little bit more to make up for their lack of gas tax contributions for, you know, road maintenance and so forth. So,
yeah, California does have time registration. That's how they do it. So your registration costs kind of cover a lot of the expenses that you have. Yeah. The electric car a little bit more than a gas powered car.
Yeah,
but you still get the benefits of, you know, if you put the stickers on your car, you can go down the commuter lanes, which is less traffic, so you use less energy because you're maintaining constant speed. I mean, that's the benefit of having that if you're a huge commuter. But most people now just buy electric cars because it's just more affordable. It really is, because the gas price is still pretty high and seems higher, I'm sure, Hawaii with all the different taxes that they
shipping.
Because you have to, like, I don't know, it's, do they still have to, like, pay an extra tax because they have to ship to, like, a contiguous 48 states?
You know, I do.
Back to Hawaii.
I don't know the process, but I wouldn't be surprised, because I know cars do that. They ship them from, you know, back when Japan actually made cars, but they used to ship them from Japan to the West Coast and from West Coast to Hawaii, you know, even though that increases the distance like by twice, I think. But yeah, it's been interesting to watch that. For me, however, you know, and I've always thought about being a good, you know, Earth citizen and getting an EV or hybrid. But and I never drove much because I really don't enjoy driving. I did when I was younger. But since retiring, you know, I have given in to our Google overlords and say they track everything I do. And so I get a monthly report, and I've had for years, of how many miles I've, you know, wandered about. Last month, July, it told me I was in a car for 73 miles total.
Wow.
And if I recall,
What was the application that told you that? It was just Google Maps?
Google Maps timeline sends me a email every month that tells me, you know, where I traveled to and how much I traveled and, you know, what the day I drove the most. Go ahead.
Yeah, so have you heard about the GPS tracking law in Massachusetts? I said it dawned on that. Yeah, they're actually trying to pass a law to actually stop that, so that keep that information private. So, because it has a lot of laws to do with abortion laws that are coming up and just privacy in general. So they're trying to pass that law right now to actually follow those people. And then they have a different tube for if you're a sex offender or something like that. They, of course, going to keep that on.
Right. But, can you opt in?
I don't know. I just heard that they were legislation they were discussing. I think it was like last week.
Yeah. As I said, I have given into the Google overlords. I actually like the data.
Yeah, I mean, cell companies have been doing it for years too. So it's like,
yeah,
and then that just gets sold off and people's knowledge. It's like that with a lot of information.
Right.
Like the with taxes too. I mean, when you fill out using a tax company like HR Block or Intuit, they sell your information to Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and Apple, and they use all that in their algorithms when they want to buy and sell.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I was going to say about that 73 miles I traveled in July, some of that is kind of bogus. It was like forced travel, because I had a $5 part in my car just die on me, just break, literally physically break, while I was in a supermarket parking lot. And so I had to call, you know, AAA and have them tow me. And so I got towed like 10 miles, 12, maybe 12 miles. And then I had to, you know, I got a ride back home. And then I had to drive back and get it. So about 40 something of those 73 miles were actually just to go take my car in for repairs and get it back. So really, I only went like 30 some miles a month. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. My suggestion is, if you're not going to, you don't need an electric car, don't get it one until your gas powered car breaks. I mean, return.
Yeah.
It's not going to be there for you. I mean,
your current car works fine. If you already paid it off, you're not paying any more taxes.
I have a 2007 car. I haven't had to pay a monthly car bill in like a decade.
Yeah, that's a saving right there. I mean, if you look at an electric car, you're talking between $800 to $1,000 a month extra. That's great.
Plus, I'm sure the annual maintenance work is more expensive than my car and the tires.
Actually, there's less just tires and maybe brakes, but actually brakes actually last longer because they use the regeneration power to slow down. Essentially, they last longer. It's just tires, pretty much. That's it. And windshield.
It's funny because I know several people, including one of my neighbors, whose car is just like fritzed out on them. And it was part. Some of them were like battery problems. And they had to wait like months to get a battery replacement for their vehicle. So that was disconcerting, to say the least.
The supply chain issues that caused that?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, supply chain issues has just been a nightmare for everybody.
Yeah.
When I was still working, one of the things we had to do was print 300 and some odd thousand checks, maybe may have been more, for a one-time tax refund from the state to taxpayers. And
do Amazon gift cards.
Huh? Yeah, I know. Like, that would have been so much smarter. But no, it had to be a paper check. And I remember getting a lot of heat. He says, when are you going to print them? I says, well, if I could get me some blank checks, that'd be good. They're kind of special. I can't use the, 24-pound blank sheets of paper. I mean, I could, but they wouldn't be legal.
With magnetic print ink it, right, too?
Yeah, yeah. And so we waited like months and months and months so I could start printing. And then they wanted me to rush it. And I said, these printers are big and they're commercial printers, but they're not built for 24-hour duty cycles for weeks and weeks and weeks. They're going to break if we do that,
You get the Gutenberg Pro.
So it was a lot of splaining to do, as they used to say in the old I Love Lucy show. But yeah, my wife has been talking about getting that. She's been driving a hybrid for years, and she's been talking about doing all electric. Says, we got to go rewire the house because, we can't just, trickle charge it off a 110-volt AC.
You can trickle charge it. If you're not driving that much, trickle charge might even work for you. But, yeah. I mean, you just have to do this upgrade the circuit so you can get the full 240, 15 amp. It's only a class 2, so it's just a little bit faster. So it's overnight charging for those cars, like 8 to 9 hours. And if you trickle charge, it's probably 24. I mean, it all depends on how you use it. And then it usually tapers off to the charging, gets even slower as it gets that 80% to save the battery. So you only do it slow over a period of time. And now that's the same thing like most electronic devices. They now have that smart charging circuit. And now I guess basically like Qi charging and stuff like that.
But
the battery health on some devices changes the battery chemistry. So a lot of people, they recommend plugging it in rather than using the Qi charge if you want to keep that battery health. Otherwise, you do change the battery chemistry because of the heat.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to Sven about that, because, he's an electrical engineer and stuff. And we're talking about that, and he feels it was okay, but I don't know. I always tell people heat is the enemy. Like extreme temperatures is the enemy of almost everything.
Yeah. But if you're like Sven, you switch out your phone every 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Issue. Even every 2 years, it should be fine. But, I mean, I held on to my phone. I just upgraded just recently to a new iPhone 14 Pro from the 11, just because the battery life was just,
I hear you.
I had like 7-8 years. So,
By the way, I got one of the things I did buy, unlike Sven, I don't buy everything, but I did buy a Pixel tablet because I really wanted to try an Android tablet again with a stylus. And when you put it on that dock that it comes with, the charger speaker dock, it only charges up to 90%, sometimes 89% by design.
For the sake of the battery.
Yeah. So by design, it maxes at 90% when it's on the... If you want to go to 100, you just need to plug it in via USB-C. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was pretty interesting. And sometimes I notice when I look at it, if I'm looking at it right now, it doesn't say it right now, but sometimes I look at its charge level, it says like 88%, and it just holds right there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go anymore.
That's smart. That's really smart to do an extended life of that device. I mean, that's what most cars do now too. They just say recommend charge it up to 8% unless you're going on a really long trip and you need that extra range.
Right. And in Hawaii, there's no such thing as a long road trip. So,
unless you keep circling the island.
Well, like I tell people, if you want to go on a long drive, the longest you can really drive, without seeing the same thing again is about 5 hours. And then you're back where you started from because it's we're on an island.
Yep.
That said, some of the early EVs, I know a friend of mine bought a, what's the Nissan? Leaf. Nissan Leaf. And he, when he got it, he says, hey, let's all go to breakfast. And so a bunch of us hop in the cars. And he says, okay, now, this is the furthest we can go to breakfast because it had like a, you know, 90-mile total range. So,
yeah.
But it's okay. We're on a small island. There's not very far we can go. But for him, it was, I think the round trip was just at the edge of his limit. I think he went like 80 miles for him round trip.
That's what it is.
And he picked us up along the way. Yeah. Yeah. So you're thinking about, so is your Tesla range a topic that we were just talking about because you were thinking about swapping out to a Tesla or?
No, I was looking at him, but like you, I have a gas powered car I've had for a decade.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't have the need yet, but I was just looking at it, just the prices, and just came up in the news that it's like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I think Tesla is probably going to become the standard connector in order to get that implementation across the entire country. I mean, it took gas, was it at least a decade or two before they started having the infrastructure in place, before they used to carry around gas in one of those little like gallon, like jars, you know,
yep.
And they used to fill the top of the gas tanks. They had the big glass bowl. Now with the gas distribution system, then they started getting trucks. Used to get bigger and bigger than they had the underground tanks. So, it took years and years and years. People don't realize that in order to get that out there. That's only like about a century ago. So, century and a half.
Yeah.
And they started out with electric cars. That was the first things that came out before anyway. So people don't really remember that. They just had the issue with starting the cold weather and issue with just getting the charge out to the device.
Yeah. I will say though, although that there's no, I don't have any need right now for an electric car, an all EV car, or even hybrid. One thing I am interested in, the smarter cars, so to speak, which the EVs and hybrids seem to be, is as I get older, I'm kind of worried about like, when do I need to give up driving and, you know, how can I get some good assist, some smart assist, you know, to help me delay that time of my life, which is, you know, not as far away as I would think, given what I've been reading in the news about. We've had several people drive into like a supermarket and a pharmacy and stuff like that here. Somebody just drove into a Long's yesterday.
Yeah, they mistake the gas for the brake.
You know, that's like 3 miles away from me. In fact, I was at the neighboring, so Long's is across the street from the supermarket I was at. And I think I was there at the time that this happened. I just happened to be far enough away. I didn't hear or see anything. But, you know, it's just stuff like that happening more and more often. Somebody drove into the Alawai Canal, I think, the other day. But I think that was a young person that was following the GPS wrong. not to laugh at that person. You know, it's a very tragic thing. But nobody died, I think. But still, you know, nobody wants to do that. But that's my interest, is basically getting a smarter, safer car, not so much the electrical part. And so I'm hoping, you know, that there'll be a nice Apple iCar or something.
Yeah.
At some point.
Possibly. Could be the next thing.
You know, before I need it. Okay. And speaking of traveling, I have not researched this, but is this possible now? Can an Android device actually see unknown AirTags and other trackers right now?
They have it in, yeah, that's currently in beta right now. So
okay.
Apple and Alpha or Google are working together to trackers. So that includes AirTags and as well as any other third-party trackers if you're using like Tracker TRs. KR, I think it was, and then two other ones that are out there that you saw Bluetooth. So they're going to work on a standard to notify people if they're being tracked. So it's a nice thing that they're a collaborative work.
Is there any ETA for its production availability of the feature?
I thought August was the time frame I saw, but
this year, like now?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I don't know if it's still beta or alpha.
I'm gonna go. You know, for our five of listeners, I'm typing now. GPS tracker Android. I don't know what to call it. Tracker. I don't know. Why is there no news? Yeah, I typed in the wrong words. I'll go look for it later. I have a Pixel 7a that I bought this year. You know, again, despite my retiree budget, I still, some habits are hard to get rid of, and buying new gadgets is apparent. But so I would like to test that because I have a couple of AirTags that I use, and I want to see if my Android phone knows nothing about them. Detect that they're in and around my home and so forth.
Yeah, think of how else you can find out. Dude, it was a joint announcement that was created.
Yeah, Apple, Google, Apple, Google.
And actually Apple's website. I'll put it in your chat.
Yeah, I see it. Apple partner and industry specification. Let's see, does it say when it's coming out? I'm scrolling, don't see it. All righty. We'll look forward to that.
It's at it.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
And it said end of 2023.
Okay, so that's pretty soon. I'll look forward to playing with that. And you know, there are just some very nefarious people doing bad things with trackers, so.
Always. Yeah. You always use technology for bad things.
Yeah, right? Evil are us.
Oh, we have a dark web.
Like I said, dark chat GPT, I'm waiting for it. All righty. So the Apple Google thing, which was announced in May. Yep. May 2nd. And we'll put that in the show notes also. Oh, I'm really interested to hear what you say about this next streaming services. So before I retired, no, let me backtrack. That's not true. At the start of the pandemic, I thought, you know, we might be stuck for a while. I'm going to subscribe to everything.
Watch it all before you go.
You know, who knows, right? You know, I'm just not going to watch the apocalyptic pandemic movies because that was just too real.
Yeah.
But I literally, so I got, you know, I already had Netflix, but I got Disney Plus, whatever the hell. I think it was CBS All Access before it became Paramount and Peacock. And it's probably stuff you never heard of, like Viki.com. Actually, I already had that way before the pandemic. That's for foreign language shows, mostly Asian. Yep. And so I got almost everything just cause, you know, because it seemed like a good idea. And now that they're all raising prices on me, you know, at a much reduced retiree income, I'm thinking, so what are you thinking as a non-retiree, as a working stiff who can afford them? So,
let's see. Let's go through it. Let's say Amazon Prime, they raised their price from $119 to $139, I think it was. Yeah. So that covers everything. I mean, with Prime, we saved in shipping a lot.
Yes.
Addicts to Jeff. Yeah, sorry. It's like, it's part of our lifestyle now. Apple TV Plus, I think they went from, what, $4.99 a month to $6.99 a month?
Yeah.
And unless you have like one of the like season passes, or you could get a little discount if you get like 2 months off, if you do the annual subscription. But pretty much with Apple TV Plus, I just get, every time I get a new Apple device, I get 3 to 4 months. That's how I continually add it to our services. So it's like a wash of us. And then T-Mobile gets us like 6 months around a year. Disney Plus, we're probably going to keep that as well too. I think they went from a price switch to like $10.99 a month. From $7.99 was when they first came out. They're adding services and they're looking to bundle now, I think Hulu and ESPN going forward. So I don't know. I prepaid like when they first came out, like 5 years at a really discounted rate of like $3.99 a month. So I haven't been impacted by it yet. So I'm just waiting to see what will happen with that, what they do with their bundling. But I continue to keep that because they're keeping new series that are coming. Hulu, I know we do it for our kids. I don't usually go onto Hulu at all because all the other services seem to cover everything. There's some like individual stuff that's coming back, like Futurama. I'd like to see the new versions of that and see how they changed their programming on that.
Yeah.
That I'll probably do a binge watch on or use one of my kids' accounts when they're back for like the holidays.
Hulu does have, you know, I got Hulu. Why did I get Hulu? I think I got a bundle deal with Hulu, ESPN Plus, and Disney at one point. The interesting thing about Hulu is I think they have... Oh, shoot. What's that Star Trek ripoff I like? The Orville.
The Orville. Yeah, that's really good.
They carry the Orville. And so, and I watch that. And this is a kind of weird one. You probably aren't interested in this one, but for me, it was fascinating. So Disney Plus, going back to Disney Plus, as you may or may not know, actually pays for some K-dramas, Korean dramas. That's,
oh, really?
That's on Disney Plus. Okay. But for some reason, not all of the ones that they, you know, that they subsidize or have sponsored or whatever appear on Disney Plus, even though it's a Disney Plus, you know, thing, it ends up on Hulu. And some of those are pretty good, especially some of the comedy thrillers that I enjoy. And so Hulu has these K-dramas that Disney, you know, funded. And the rest of the world are on Disney Plus, except in the U.S., but not in the U.S. So
they also have the live TV too with Hulu, right? And do you use that?
No, I think that's an extra. I think that's a premiere. I have just a regular premiere.
Yeah, I think they raised it to, it used to be like, I forget what it was. It's like, it used to be like,
yeah.
It's like expensive, really expensive, if I remember.
Yeah. Andrew, I'm paying way more than I really want. This is the nightmare I had years ago when cable companies were talking about unbundling channels. I said, yeah, it's expensive now, but if I have to pay for every channel, and that's essentially what I'm doing now, right? I pay for
the same
CBS, right? Paramount. I play for NBC, which is Peacock, and then Disney Plus, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Viki. I'm probably forgetting a few I subscribe to.
You want Lubo as well, too, or
Stars. Okay, now, so Showtime got integrated into Paramount Plus. So now, and I was getting it free through my cable company, but now it doesn't really matter.
Same.
But now it's part, I think it's part of Paramount Plus now, which is sort of interesting. And then what used to be HBO, they've absorbed Discovery Channel and somebody else. So, you know, all of a sudden all of
HBO
that.
HBO Max, yeah. They HGTV. Discovery.
Right. Those all collapsed down. So I'm looking at my, I also have YouTube Music. Well, actually, I have YouTube Red. It used to be called YouTube Red. Just get rid of commercials. And I hate commercials so much on YouTube that I decided it was worth paying extra for
that. You can't waste 5 cents. I can.
No.
It was trying to skip ad. It doesn't.
You know, the older you get, you figure, you know, I don't have that many years left. You know, I have time for this.
My life.
You know? You know, the seconds become more important as you get older. They're not as wasteful as you are with time as when you're... Anyway, I think that's about all I've got. But that's still way too many. So what are you thinking? Are you thinking of getting rid of anything?
I don't know. I always think that, but some of the stuff always comes for free. So I'm like, I get bundled with something or another.
Yeah.
So, and I haven't canceled too much of it. I mean, I haven't gone down to spreadsheet tracking like a lot of people I know have done.
I should talk that.
They monitor like how much what their costs are and their budget are, but we just consider it part of the day to day. I mean, and we actually like, I don't even use the cable box anymore that comes with our
Xbox. I know, right?
App. We use the app and we use it with a Fire Stick or built it to the TV. It works great. I mean, you don't even have to have a cable box and everything. So it's, a few shows we do want to watch TV on, we can do that, or we can record it with the DVR that's available anywhere. You can watch it on a tablet, your phone. So it's nice, that aspect of it, having it. And with that, we get the Max subscription, which I think is probably the best out of all the streaming services. With all the WB new series they've come out with, some of them are kind of cheesy, really, but I like the stuff. So I'm just a huge comic book fan.
I have to say that of all the by new, I mean not Netflix. Of all the new streaming services, what used to be called HBO Max, now just which is the dumbest rebranding since New Coke, in my opinion. I think HBO Max has the best content, or Max has the best content.
Yeah.
For me. I watch it a lot.
And the new movie releases, they have them out fairly quickly. I'm surprised how quick their turnaround time is, especially with the pandemic. It was like literally like same time as theaters, which was like crazy at the time, but was awesome.
Yeah.
It's an IMAX quality audio as well, too. It's there. So with full DTS, it's nice. And I think Disney is probably could come following pretty well with that as well, too, with their new content, especially having the whole Star Wars IP is like huge,
right?
Marvel stuff for them. They keep that continuity with in theaters and then with all the series that are going on.
Although the new Marvel TV series is so bad.
Yeah, they're not 100% there, but I mean, they're trying to follow the comic book series through and trying to get that content exposed.
Oh, don't get me started. I'm a comic book fan.
Yeah,
Secret Invasion of Disney Plus is awful.
Yeah, they change a lot of the stuff that's in the comic book, so people who are shoot true lore followers, like they're like, hey, they adopted this, but I can see where they're going with it because they want to do different storylines and integrate everything.
Not to turn this into Comics Views, which was a separate podcast in the old days, but Secret Invasion is so different from the comic. I'm rereading Secret Invasion right now on Comixology. And it's like, these are like two different stories. It's like Foundation on Apple TV Plus. It's like, you know, I wish Asimov would come back from the grave and just slap a few heads over.
Disney fumbled Fantastic Four multiple times, and this their way to get step around that, I think. Yeah. So
the only streaming service I'm really giving some thought to stopping is Peacock, which is NBC.
I get a free with Comcast, so
it's... Oh, okay.
I'd really rarely watch anything on it.
That's the problem, right? And so I don't...
Series that are carried with it. That's about it. Maybe a movie or two.
Comcast owns NBC Universal, right? That's why they... Okay, that's why you get that free. So I don't have Comcast here. Not complaining. I'm okay with my cable vendor. Don't shut me off. but yeah, I just don't see... I forget why I got Peacock. There was something on that I wanted to see. And then I never watched Parks and Recreation when it was out, like, you know, years and years and years ago. So I just finished the whole series. And now I'm looking at my, you know, continue watching, and there's like nothing there. I think I watched Kevin Hart's Heart to Heart series. You know,
he has a whole interview series. It's pretty deep. Yeah, they had Yellowstone. Good. Yellowstone was probably like their biggest thing.
Yeah.
And Mr. Sheridan, he's done a great series. He's like branched off, and he's now on another streaming service, Paramount. Yeah, I think it is for all the prequels to Yellowstone series. And he has a new series that just came out too. I think it's called Lioness. I think it's with
CIA or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a back operative type military mission set with Nicole Kidman, Morgan Freeman's in it, not Zoe Saldana, Avatar. It's like huge, huge cast. A lot of people and a lot of cast members from Yellowstone too. He's just a great writer and he's done a lot for like the industry. It's kind of funny, like with the Yellowstone Park, I think he started out just filming there and ended up buying like the 666 Ranch. I don't know if you've watched the series at all. The 666s. He bought that ranch and preserved it, and he's used all the money. So he said, "I have to like create more shows in order to fund this preservation of these lands," which is kind of fun. So,
well, that seems like a good reason to do more stuff.
It is.
So I'm looking at Peacock now. You know, it's like Mrs. Davis, which seemed interesting. You know, it's an AI apocalyptic, whatever world. But I watched, I think, part of the first 10 minutes and I couldn't get interested in it. So, yeah, I think if anything is on the chop list, it's going to be Peacock. I just don't see it.
Yep. Then you could just like get it for like a month and just watch all the stuff.
Yeah.
Cancel and go
on. I will say one of the things interesting about the Paramount streaming service, it includes the live stream from the local CBS affiliate. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm sure, I don't know if you have Paramount Plus. If you're a Star Trek fan, you probably do.
Yeah, I do. Yep.
And you probably can see your, a 7x24 live stream of your local CBS affiliate. So,
They do everything, all their live stuff. And I think they have Big Brother's a big show, Survivor, all that stuff. It's like, and that's what a lot of people actually just get it for, is just to watch those two shows. They don't have cable. But they have like a lot of good Showtime shows on there too. I think they have the reboot of Dexter. They have Frank Cranston showed Your Honor, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, the Dexter reboot is quite good.
And then they showed a lot of cool top movies too, like Everything All at Once. And that's like probably one of the best movies I've seen.
Yes, Showtime. Yeah.
Such a great cast.
Yeah. Yeah, at first I was like, what kind of dumb movie idea is this? Then I watched and I said, oh, this is not a dumb movie idea. This is a good movie idea.
Yeah. So good. And then you think it's over, and you're like, what? That was really awful. False credit scene. It's like, that was really good. That was really good. Really well.
Yeah. Amazing. And it was like a budget movie, too, I think.
Yeah. It was just so good. I don't know. It was so many aspects of it. I'd love to see a sequel of it or a spinoff. It'd be nice to see a lot of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
I think they're doing really well in the Star Trek series. I really like.
Yes. Okay. Now, I forgot to put it in their notes, but. Since you're a fan and I'm a fan, and Suet John's not here because he's a fan, but he doesn't have Paramount Plus, I think. Okay, you specifically mentioned the musical episode. I get the hint you didn't like it because I loved it.
I liked it. I just saw stuff on the internet, people talking about it was Jumping the Shark. I'm like, I thought it was great. It's like, it was, and I like the previous episode before too, where they did the crossover with the animated series. And it's like, that was so well done. You know, it's like, I love when that creative. Out of the box and do stuff that's different from what you normally see. That was amazing how good they cast in school and the choreography. I mean, they did it for like a year. It was like a year they planned for that and rehearsed all the hard work that goes into that. I know because my daughter's into theater and stuff like that. And it was kind of interesting hooking it too that the music was written by a musician that we know from the Boston area, Kate Hanley. So,
oh, wow.
And she had to sit on it for a year. She couldn't talk about it or say anything about it. So, and it finally came out. She's like, yeah, I can finally say it was part of this.
I thought the music was great, first of all. I mean, I literally really enjoyed the music, just as music, you know?
Yeah.
And And it wasn't just some ridiculous, you know, people start singing because they're, you know, in love or something. It's actually a plot device.
Yeah.
It's a plot device. And also now when you say K-pop, it can also mean Klingon pop. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. They actually did that one scene. I just cracked up. I was like, that was pretty good.
Really good. I've watched that scene several times now.
That's so funny. That's like a gift. It's like a gift for the future. I really think so.
Yeah, Klingon pop, it's a thing. But yeah, so I'm like you, I'm really, especially this, what is it now? Third season of Strange New Worlds? Is it where? Third season?
Yeah, third season. I think it was
amazing. But it, you know, there are only 10 episodes a season, so it's really, maybe I miscounted.
The Finale, next week, or this week, Thursday, usually when it comes out, I think.
Yeah, the last episode. But yeah, the crossover with the animated Lower Deck was, I couldn't figure out how they're going to do it, but they did it and it worked. And it was so weird. Those old scientists.
Yeah.
And the fact that the voice actors look like their cartoon counterparts.
That was really, I was impressed. I mean, I'm a huge fan of, I can't think of his name, Dennis Quaid's son.
Jack.
He's such a, Jack. Yeah. Jack he's Quaid. Such a great actor. I mean, I love him in The Boys series.
Yes. Yeah.
So good. And he carried over that same kind of character. I mean, he's probably him. And his character too.
Yes.
So well done.
And even that wobbly knee walk he did in real life in her version. I thought, oh man.
And the hair color too. I thought that was pretty impressive too. They had purple. A little tinge of purple in there too.
So yeah, really, really enjoyed that. Well, I've really enjoyed this whole season of Strange New Worlds. And I can't say the same for Star Trek Discovery, that I watched it until about season two.
I loved the first like two seasons. It was just like action packed, go, go, go. And I don't know what happened. And I think they tried to do too much in one season, or they tried to top like what they did in the previous season, which is really hard to do because they did such a good job with it. But I think they were just trying to wrap it up. It seemed to just seem rushed. They just take their time and follow the cadence that they had the other
one. Right, right. And then they jumped the shark by going into the future. I mean, future.
Well, time travel is that hard.
And, anyway, but they did a few good things. You know, they introduced the characters to Strange New World, or, you know, Captain Pike and all those kind of folks, number one. So that was good. Spock, of course. But yeah, after the first two seasons, it's like, oh, this is tough sledding. I don't think Lower Deck.
Are they slated for another season? I don't know.
The Discovery? I think this might be their last one. I think the upcoming one, I think they're going to like five seasons and they're out. I think there's supposed to be two new ones. I think there's a movie coming out, Star Trek.
That'd be good.
Section 31 with Michelle Yeoh.
Oh, love her.
And but I think it's a movie, not a series. And I think they're doing like Star Trek Academy or something like that. So I don't know how that's going to work. But then again, I didn't think Lower Decks was going to work. And it's, you know, one of my favorites.
It's actually pretty good. I thought it was, I turned it on just for background noise and I ended up watching it.
Yeah. I said, oh, these stories have been way better than Discovery. So, plus Discovery just broke too much canon for me. Like, what's the deal with their drive, their spore drive? You know, why didn't we ever hear about this before?
Mycelian culture, man. It's the future. Replace a meat clothes. Vegan leather.
Okay. And the last topic, speaking of space, the final frontier. I did not know about this. So tell me more about this NASA thing you came upon.
Oh, yeah. So NASA is actually offering their own streaming service, too, called NASA Plus. So it's going to be a stream service. It's currently in beta right now. People can look at some of the videos that they have up on there, but they just want to just share their knowledge, what they're doing to the public and let them be aware of it. And of course, it's going to be free because it's paid for by your tax dollars, just kind of like weather or it. And companies make profit off of that, but hopefully this will just be free. They used to have it for a while, NASA TV, and people could watch it through different streaming devices or apps and stuff like that, but hopefully this will bring it out there. They're going to have an app for Android and iOS coming out soon, I think this year. So it looks like something, it's nice to have, especially with all the great work they're doing, right? Recently with ours.
Yeah. You know, back when I was working, we put in a couple of, you know, really big screens, like in 80 inches and stuff. Or to me, they were big. And sometimes I would just turn them on and, you know, put something on for atmosphere because we were in a, you know, data center basement and we had no windows. Yep. And so this would be very cool to put on an 80-inch screen. It's just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Lots of fun. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. And wow, we went long. I can't use Podcast Enhance to clean up our voice. But hopefully our audio quality, I can fix it manually. I have to say, I'm not a fan of Adobe in general, but their Podcast Enhancer, which is a free, beta service right now. I don't want Adobe to hear me say this. I would consider paying for it because it's actually pretty cool. But not like $30 a month, So Adobe, I never said anything nice about you. Alrighty. Okay. Sorry I took up so much of your time. I didn't know we were going to go this long.
Oh, but it's great.
Really appreciate it. Movies Podcast 469 without the good Dr. John Westphal, Tata Gasawar, and our good friend, Stephen Hughes. And he'll be back. He'll be back soon. I sent out a tickler to folks saying, hey, when can you appear next? And Stephen's available, I think, a couple more times. And we'll have him back as well as some other mutual friends. Thank you, Stephen. And I'll talk to you later.
Always a pleasure.